stretch out, but your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin, good morning and welcome to the Inside Running Podcast, Shoe Geeks episode for the month of March. And with me I have Julian, 214 marathon runner and owner of the running company in Ballarat. How are you going, mate?
I'm good and I'm excited to see you talk in person because you're so handsome.
Thank you. And Tommy, you look like you're in the clinic. What's the internet like over there in Sydney?
Just ran in. I'm in the back room. Dungeon. The clinic. Hopefully it's okay.
Yeah, good. Brilliant. So yeah, we're trying something different this week. We're just we're in person. Yeah. We've got some shoes to show. And I'm not sure if this will be quite successful as a traditional podcast because people will have to, you know, they'll have to sit down and watch us for 40 minutes. So that might be a problem.
Well, I think this will still go out as an audio podcast. It just might help to have reference for some of the things that we talk about. If someone wants to hear something we talk about and then they can jump on this, which will probably be posted on the Inside Running Facebook page or Instagram page, then we can they can reference what we're talking about with some visual aids.
Jules, you go through your week or your weeks.
Yeah. All right. So I have been using a similar collection of shoes to the previous month. I've now put around 350, I think, Ks into the Nike ZoomX Invincible Run Flyknit. It was a real question mark on durability around that shoe when we first started wearing it. But to me, it's actually handling it really well as long as I'm giving it a few, I'm giving it a spell in between wears. So I run maybe once a day in that shoe, rather than twice a day, and it seems to return really well still after 300k, which is normally when I look to start retiring shoes just based on how I wear them. The Invincible still feels poppy.
You think it needs more time just to recover between runs because the foam's so compliant?
I reckon it does, and that's just purely anecdotal. But it's just what I've found with the shoe. If I wear it again later in the day, it feels quite flat, pancakey, maybe a little sloppy. But if I give it to the next morning, then it seems to get some integrity back.
Good.
Yeah. So that's been fun. I mean, that's a shoe that really stops me from running fast. I don't feel fast in that shoe whatsoever. I don't feel like I want to get moving on the easy runs. It's a real cruiser. It probably comes down to really how soft it is and how much shoe is under your foot. I don't feel like it changes my gait at all. I just don't feel like I'm fast in it. Whereas sometimes I put a shoe on like this one, maybe the Pegasus 37, and I can put this shoe on and my easy runs get 10 second a K quicker from the Invincible straight away. It's not as fat through the heel. Underneath, it doesn't have this massive big footprint, so it feels like the ground contact time's a little less. It's firmer and it's a little more rigid, like up front for me, which sort of feels, it's probably not, doesn't contribute to its fastness or sort of ability to go quicker, but there is something about that shoe, the strip back nature, that makes me feel good in it. The only problem is, up at the toe box area, so in this area here, it's really shallow, and if I'm going down a hill in this shoe, it just destroys my big toe. And if I've done a couple of long runs in them and it takes 3 or 5 days for the toe to start to not be as sore, and so I have to wear big wide long shoes for that time, so I've got to be careful where I use them. What else have I been wearing? I've been wearing the Hoka Stinson ATR. So I had a track race this month, and I wore the Dragonfly for 5K. And it really cooked my calves. Like, I know there's lots of chat about the dragonfly looking after calves almost as if a normal training shoe does, but this was not the case for me in this race. So immediately after I finished, my calves were burning, they're on fire. And then the next sort of week, they were really stiff. And so the only way I could really run without a sort of soreness was wearing the Stinson ATR from Hoka, which is probably the stiffest, most rocked shoe that I have in the cupboard. So it's not
It's funny you say that. It must be a relative change. Like, you've been doing a lot of training in traditional high stack shoes for your work, et cetera, and not doing much in the Dragonfly. But I guess I know Tommy, he gravitated to wearing more like, you know, traditional shoes for his mileage and some of his sessions. And you pull up pretty good in your carbs in the Dragonfly. But if you went down to, say, a Zoom Victory or a Dolphin track spike, you'd pull up with sore calves as well, wouldn't you, Tommy? It's just like the relative change as opposed to an absolute change of foam.
Yeah, because, I mean, how much have you trained in the Dragon, Jules? Like, have you done much?
Very little, very little. Yeah, I've done two sessions. Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, I got sucked into everyone talking about how protective they are.
But that, I mean, this, once again, they're just not as protective as the shoes that you're currently wearing and training in. But they're definitely more protective than, you know, traditional Victory, for example. So
yeah, like if you had have worn the Victory or a Mutumbo, you'd have been even sorer.
Mm. And also, I ran like 5K at a pace that I very rarely train at.
Yeah,
I don't do a lot of speed work. And so the pace I was running at probably would have caused sore calves.
Anyway.
Whichever shoe I wore, it's just the fact that I wore this that it cops the blame. So anyway, I had to recover with the Stinson after that. And then is there anything new I've been wearing? I have a new pair of Asics Glide-Ride that I've started wearing.
That's the twos, the Glide-Ride twos?
Glide-Ride twos, sorry, yeah.
So that's this guy?
That is that guy, yeah. I've been wearing that exact shoe. That's the standard width. I probably need a wide width in that shoe. Very rigid, yep, through the forefoot.
Yeah.
A bit
narrower.
It's a bit narrow. It's a bit too narrow for me through the midfoot. I reckon I need some width. But it was a gift. So I can't ask for the other width when something's a gift. But if I was going to
get one. It comes in extra width, does it?
It comes in a wide, which we stock in the store, because the wide's actually not very wide in it at all. Yeah,
it's good to have that option. Good.
Yeah,
it's been a good update from the first model as well. I reckon you can sort of see the midsole. It's pretty tough to see. The previous model had this really large concavity cut out of the midsole, whereas now they've sort of filled in the space. It's much more stable on foot strike.
Definitely, and it feels a lot softer too. The cushion, I've got it in front of me as well. The change in the foam actually made it a lot more comfortable underfoot. The first one was really quite firm, whereas this one, yeah, is softer. Whatever they changed, whatever foam they changed, they got it right.
Yeah.
It's probably the most rocked shoe now. Oh, well, the Hoka Stinson's pretty rocked. This one, the rocker feel is more pronounced. It's hard to sort of see if I try to keep it flat, but this is the bit that we're referring to here, like this sort of kick curve up, and the stiffness associated with that makes it feel more rocked than any other shoe.
I don't feel any shoe, like a general training shoe, more rocked than this. This acts as the most pronounced rocker out of all the shoes I've worn.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my lineup. I've kept it pretty safe lately. So I've been wearing the New Balance 1080, the V11. So the V11 got an update maybe last month, and it changed the heel counter, and it changed, and the upper changed as well. The knit got maybe even more flexible than it was, which I don't love. Like, I like to be a little more tied down, but it got rid of a few little niggle spots for some people. So on the top of the foot, a lot of people used to get pressure from above, sort of around that arch, the top of the foot area, the bridge of the foot. And then at the heel, there were some seams in the heel cup that used to irritate people, and they've got rid of that. But that shoe doesn't really fit. The heel counter doesn't fully fit my my heel too well. It's really strange. I feel like I have to sit. My foot sits a couple of mil in front of the heel cup. It doesn't let me sink back into it. So there's always a gap there. But I mean, I ran 30K in it on Sunday, and there's no dramas. It's just not that perfect fit like some other shoes are. Yeah.
And Tommy, you're back into training now, and could you tell the listeners what you're training for at the moment?
A marathon, most likely Gold Coast. So there's obviously this Athletics Australia marathon, which they've finally announced. It's on in, I think, 5 weeks. But I think I've left my run a bit late. I've just had a bit of a rough 4 or 5 weeks with, took me a while to get over that cold or flu, whatever it was, to be honest. Motivation a bit down and just feeling a bit rough. Haven't done that much session wise, just still doing a little bit of intensity, but mostly just volume, just getting some running in.
Yep.
So shoes, yeah, I've been wearing a lot of the Invincible, to be honest. I'm enjoying it. It's a weird one, but I was super excited about this. But yeah, I just wasn't sure. I started, did a few runs, and it was one of those things where I just wasn't sure if I liked it or not. To the point now where I do definitely like it. But for specifically easy runs without trying to pick it up, particularly like post-session stuff. Because I had a niggle as well. The softness was a little bit of a factor early on. So it's obviously, I've got it here. It's got that massively flared geometry. So that rear foot contact area is massive, and the forefoot's pretty big as well. And that's how they get stability. But because it's ZoomX and that stuff is just so soft, I don't think you can really counter the softness even with that amount of width. So the side-to-side stability, the frontal plane stability was still a little bit annoying at the beginning, but like now that's all fine. My body feels good. It's a really enjoyable shoe. It's just it's ZoomX, so I just bloody love P-backs. That foam is just so good, and I really want other brands to bring out some P-backs models, because it's just the foam's phenomenal.
How many k's you put on them?
At 100 miles now.
Oh yeah.
So it's good. Like, lockdown's good. It's got, you know, that super, it's a super padded, chunky, heel counter. So lockdown's good. Just in general, the upper fit's good, I find, and the outsole. So it's got this mini waffle design, and I reckon it just feels like it grips really well. I really like the, it just in the wet, like it's been pretty wet in Sydney, and it grips real well. So
I'm thinking we'll see that type of geometry used by Nike in a few future shoes as well. So the same with the waffle and just the size of the rear foot surface area. I reckon we'll start seeing that as the norm for a mileage shoe.
I had a little bit of calf clippage issues at the start. It sort of has gone away. Maybe I'm adapted to it, but like this edge, the inner edge was like clipping the opposite calf just because it's so wide. It hasn't happened.
Actually, one of the guys that runs out at Harriers, he's a podiatrist as well, Steve. And Steve wouldn't mind me mentioning this. He said the exact same thing the day after you said it. Said he just, the size of the surface area was getting a bit of clippage coming through more than he had previously. So,
Yeah, but I'd agree. Like it makes you, it kind of helps facilitate you not smashing the easy runs. So it kind of helps you just, you don't really want to run fast in it. So,
hey, maybe this is how that injury prevention works. Maybe a shoe that forces you to run slow is how this works.
Yeah, maybe. I kind of was like, with this one, I was thinking as well, it was kind of like how I wanted the 1080 to work for me, just to be like that plush, cushioned, easy day shoe. But I reckon, like for me, this is I'd probably use it for the same purpose, but I probably prefer this to the 1080 for a number of reasons. Like the fit, I have fit issues in the 1080. And the 1080s are probably close to the softness, but this just has a little bit more like give back poppiness to it, which is a bit, makes it a bit easier to run in.
New Balance have the More 3 coming out very shortly, I think next month. And that's going to be an oversized 1080, basically. It's going to be more flexible than the previous version. That could be the shoe that you're looking for there, Tommy. The Invincibles are kind of hard to get, aren't they? Like, if you want a second pair, it's difficult to find because there's limited numbers that come into the country. They sell out basically on the day we get them. It's like the old school Vaporfly releases. So
I didn't know that was so hard to get.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Have you been selling the Infinity 2 at your store, Julian?
Yeah, we have. We tick through those.
Has that been as successful in terms of sales or?
No, the plastic clip on the medial side irritates people, like straight up. It definitely not as successful because it's not Zoom X as well. It doesn't have this amazing, crazy, almost circus-like feel underfoot. But it's a solid shoe and we still go pretty well with it. It's a pretty narrow shoe. It's better than the first version. But the magic, there's no magic underneath. And sometimes that's a good thing for people.
So, Tommy, I saw you did a session a couple of days ago in your new shoe. You want to talk about that one?
Yeah, yesterday. I got the Magic Speed. So it's a new one from ASICS. So I guess, what's it marketed at? It's kind of like a racing training shoe for distance on the road. Mm-hmm. Marathon, probably. I put it on and I wasn't, you're not blown away by it. There's no sort of magic feel to it. It certainly felt better than the Meta Racer at first feel. Like it just had a bit more cush, particularly in the forefoot. The forefoot felt like I found in the Meta Racer, the forefoot was a little bit dead, no real life to it. And when you're trying to run fast in a shoe, I think you really want that forefoot to be kind of poppy and feel like there is some cush when you're getting up on the forefoot. Yep. So this one had that. So this is kind of billed as the fast version of the Nova Blast. So I know we've chatted about Nova Blast in the past. It's one of my recent favorites. Like I love the Nova Blast. Mm. It kind of had a little bit more of that. I mean, it's the same foam in there. So it had that 4 foot pop, but a lot more responsive. Like it's not as, it feels like the stack is lower.
Yep.
And just a little bit firmer. So I don't know if it's the same Dromedar or whether whether it's just the stack difference, but it felt a little bit firmer.
I think
pretty poppy.
You can probably contribute it to the stack, but also, I always say, well, you've got a training shoe and a racing shoe. The shoes that have so much outsole on them, they're more of a training shoe, aren't they? I reckon the weight is in this outsole. There's a lot of rubber.
It's a thick outsole. Again, with this outsole, it's kind of got these raised little lugs that act a bit like the waffle probably in some of the Nike stuff, and I felt like it had. So yesterday I ran on concrete path, which can get a bit slippy, and this gripped well. So grip I wouldn't say is going to be an issue with this shoe. I'm going to use it more of a training shoe. Like I don't think this is not performance orientated enough for me to want to be racing in it.
Yep. You can feel the rocker in it though when you're walking in it, and obviously when you start running in it, the rocker is relatively aggressive.
Yep.
So they've nailed that.
Yeah, definitely. It's got a half carbon plate in it towards in the forefoot. So when you have the rocker and you have the stiffness, you just feel it because it's not bending as much. So you just feel that rocker. So it felt pretty good. Just did what was it doing? Like almost like they'll. It was two laps of this path. It was just under a K. So like 6K reps basically in them.
Mm.
Yeah. Or using for similar sort of stuff. They did feel, which you mentioned too, when you put it on Knitter, they felt like negative drop when I first put them on. I think tech specs five mil drop.
Yeah.
They felt just like zero to negative. So this is what I've got in here. ridiculous. But. It's a double.
Oh, it's a double. Yeah.
A double. So I got a 6 and a 4 in there. And that made it felt like normal. Like, that made it feel like more enjoyable.
It's like Julian's famous quote, just let a shoe be a shoe. Don't interrupt with it too much.
What? How does your foot even fit in there? Do you have to put like a Velcro strap over the top?
No, ASICS, if I did that in, say, yeah, like, I don't know, other brands, but ASICS, you know, ASICS Lockdown, their heel lockdown's bloody good. So they've got at the back here, like a little bit like the Next Percent does, like this little foam pad that goes around the back. And it's still, obviously my heel's heaps higher, but that just still locks it in. So there was like zero heel slippage, even in that. Yeah. So, yeah.
So what shoes? That is an issue, obviously. What shoes will these compete with, like, for you, a space in your rotation?
Yeah, like, to be honest, I think I was saying the other day, because I would normally just probably do a session in Next Percents or something. So it's kind of like, I would just use it to, if I'm just want to save those shoes a little bit, because there's no reason why I couldn't just do that session in one of those super shoes, like a Next Percent. But I guess I'll just use it as an alternate for some of those runs. Yeah.
But I bet it would compete against an Endorphin Speed from Saucony, I guess a TC from New Balance. They're probably a bit more poppy issue than the TC, but probably just a touch more traditional. Like, I think because it's lower stack and it's a little bit firmer in the forefoot, I reckon I could put this on a grass track pretty well and not be too unstable on it, hopefully. Whereas I noticed with the Speed, the Endorphin Speed can just be a bit sloppy being, you know, higher stack and relatively soft plate in it. So
I was thinking the same
probably,
thing. Yeah, like
probably more stable.
Cross country down here involves dirt paths, off road,
and good grip. Great
good
grip.
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So some of the shoes have struggled with grip. I know the Endorphin series on the track is really slippy. And then so we sort of struggle to find those cross country shoes now. To me, this is perfect for that.
And what I'll say is, and I'm not sure you agree with this, Tom, as well, but I think the upper is more of a race upper than the Meta Racer. There's obviously less cushion in the back of it, for example, but I like the upper. I think they've nailed the upper in this shoe. So it might be a little bit narrow for some, but if you haven't got a narrow foot, I reckon the upper plays pretty nice as a racing shoe.
I was thinking the opposite. I thought there's a lot more space in my forefoot than other racing flats. I was thinking this was pretty generous.
Maybe not width, but there might be a lot of volume in the shoe. So I can, like, it's got a fair bit of height, the roof's tall, but it doesn't feel too, I don't know if it's narrow. It might be slightly narrow. Maybe my foot's getting wider that I'm not running as much and getting fatter.
Yeah, maybe. Because, yeah, I've had some racing flats on lately that I wouldn't want to wear because of how narrow they were. But this I thought straight off, I'm like, oh, more people will fit in this.
Okay, there you go.
But we'll see. All right.
Cool.
What have you been wearing, Nitta?
That's
at my 10th week of not running. So I've been outsourcing my reviews. So one of my juniors rocked up to training on Tuesday and he had only his 880s. He had a session of like 1K reps on the track. So he actually wore the Magic Speed for me as well. And he's come out the back of wearing the Turbo, Pegasus Turbo. So it was quite a change for him. So quite a poppy responsive shoe, whereas and completely different category of shoe to the Turbo as well, which has no plate, really soft. So, but now I'm 2 weeks away from running again. And if you guys had 12 weeks off running, what shoe would you go back to straight away for your volume, you reckon?
I would go back to something simple. It depends what I was out from. I would probably wear the Pegasus. That would be the shoe I would come back with.
I'm going to try this guy. This is the Cumulus 23. So it's a pretty simple shoe. There's no posting on it, no plastic. The rubber outsole looks all right. They still put this guidance line through ASICS. I'm not sure if they need the guidance line through there, to be honest. I'm not sure
what
you
think. Well, what does that do? What is the guidance
line? Well, it's meant to try and drift you towards the big toe, isn't it? It's meant to guide you through the forefoot towards the high gear, like, you know, toes one and two propelling straight through, straight line. But I'd argue it probably can't do that, but it's more aesthetic now. And the company's been doing something for a long time, they sort of don't like to move away from it too quickly without sort of, you know, I guess discussing it in detail for a couple of years.
Especially a Japanese company.
But the foam of this shoe, I was saying last time, is that the first time I put an ASICS traditional shoe on, so not like the Light series, but the foam is really plush and soft. I think it weighs around about 280 grams, runs up a 10 mil heel pitch. I think it feels very similar to a Nova Blast foam, but obviously not quite as high stack. they still stick the gel in this shoe. And yeah, I might come back and start running that in a couple of weeks' time. So, and I'll rotate that between that and probably, you know, just a very traditional shoe. Like I've got a Pegasus as well, which I'll probably use. Pegasus 37, which feels a bit poppier.
Mm. Yeah, I reckon that's an underrated shoe, the Pegasus 37. Mm. You just got to find the right foot shape for it.
Mm.
All right, cool. So should we talk about, oh, well, we've got classic shoes. So because we were doing a video, we all thought let's bring in a classic shoe that we can sort of show the listeners or the watchers, the viewers. Because now we can actually like get excited by it because people can see it. So I'm going to show you my classic shoe to start with. This shoe was released in 2012 for the London Olympics.
Oh, don't be the same as mine.
Finet Racer. And the reason I'm showing you this one is because I collect these. I have a bunch of new ones in boxes and stuff. I grabbed one out that I use as a casual because I couldn't be bother going through the collection. But the Flyknit Racer was kind of the first time that Nike used Flyknit in their uppers. So that was kind of revolutionary. You can sort of, well, you can't really see, but basically like it's not a mesh. So it's a knitted upper. And it was a bit of a game changer at the time. The foam underneath is one of the hardest foams that you'll ever put on your foot. I'm feeling it now going, it feels like it's been frozen. That's how hard it is.
Yeah, so, I've got a story. Show us the outsole of that shoe. Yeah, it's like a waffled outsole. I remember, Tommy, you know the race that was in Sydney, the 10K? They had run the bridge. The Harbour Bridge, I think it is. Sydney Harbour 10. And it was wet that day. And you know how like you run around the Harbour Bridge there and it's like tiled for about maybe three or four Ks. So you go back and forth. Yeah. I wore this shoe and I was slipping for 6 out of the 10 kilometers. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of shoes do that. That's a real issue with that course. I think the pavers are,
It was a sunny day.
You actually like that shoe to run in though, did you, Julian? Like it's innovative, but
not at all. Like, not at all.
It wasn't that great a shoe performance wise.
I saw them running the marathon at London in this shoe, like a lot of the Nike athletes, and I was shaking my head going, oh, this is promotional here. Surely these athletes aren't picking this over the Lunar Racer, which was out at the time, which was like the marathoning shoe. Surely not. But yeah, I reckon Nike probably sort of said, hey, wear this shoe, win a medal and get this extra bonus.
Do you know how funny is it? You remember when shoe technology upgrades were literally just like a new upper, for example, or an innovative upper? My shoe is this one, which is Adidas's first Prime Knit that they released. And this was 2012, and they made 2012 of them for the London Olympics. This is number 1921. And it was literally a seamless, but was called the Adidas Prime Knit. It was their racing flat. And that was the upgrade. And it came out the exact same time. I don't know who brought it out first. I don't know if the Flyknit came out before the Prime Knit. I can't even tell you.
I reckon Flyknit came out first because Nike sued Adidas over the use of Prime Knit.
There you go.
I'm pretty sure that's right. But, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
But this remains the only traditional flat I have left now. Like everything's high stack and either plated, but this is the traditional, the only, well, maybe a Lunar Racer, but that's still not traditional really. So.
I'm at work. I don't really have many shoes here. So all I had was this old guy. It's not that old, but you know, this fella.
Yeah. I ran a marathon in them.
You ran a marathon in these?
Oh, wait.
Not a bad.
The one before, I think.
Okay. It's a bit of a, like, I thought it was a, one thing I thought that it was good to note about this shoe, which I thought was really good, which is in very stark contrast to that Flyknit Racer you just showed me, is the anatomical toe box. So this medial side is heap squared off. And ever since they brought out this model, like see this, how it's quite up this edge. It doesn't really taper cutting across too much here. And seriously, since they brought out this model, I reckon like either the Dragons, all their racing, all their performance models have been way more anatomical in the toe box.
Agreed.
As in they don't cut across, like they're not as pointed, which is just stupid. Like that Flynet racer was so pointy. The big toe was like pushed across the second toe.
Yeah.
To the point that I actually, when I was running, I used to run in that and it actually felt, it just felt like I was conscious of it basically. And I love that about like, it's just heaps more tapered. You know, that's pointy.
Nike still did that a little bit. You know, when they first released the Flyknit React, but then they released the Odyssey but the Odyssey was really narrow in the forefoot and it wasn't tapered in. It was the same. It was meant to be that. I hated it so much as well. It felt like a B-grade shoe because of the upper.
Yeah. It was so pointy. So having that big toe leverage, I know that that's one of their design points, is like to allow that big toe to splay a little bit more so you get better leverage and push off. I actually think it is a really good and important design feature. I wish more brands did more anatomical stuff. That's pretty good from Nike, because Nike's been a bit trash in the past for just being all about aesthetics and not thinking so much about some of the performance aspects.
And that's still the public perception sometimes for Nike as well, especially people that walk through a clinical door as well. They think that Nike are bad for your feet, but they did focus on some more aesthetically pleasing shoes, but now their fits are anatomically as good as any other brand.
So like that about that shoe. And it was a bit of a weird one though. The Elite was just one of those crossover sort of could race in it, could train in it, could some people daily trained in it. Weird one, like an all-rounder. But it was enjoyable. I liked it. It was soft. That Cushlon foam was pretty forgiving at the time. Now it seems a bit outdated, that shoe. I'd probably just use it for some short, easy runs, warm-ups, cool-downs, that sort of stuff.
That's it. I've got a question here. So the question is, can you talk a bit about the Meta Rocket in running shoes? History, how it works, pros and cons for the show. An explanation of the medial posting a couple episodes ago was particularly good. From Craig Berg. So do you guys want to kick us off and talk a bit about the rocker in shoes? So rocker, the geometry of it tapered off in the sagittal plane. So
example of a rocker. Rocker, I think the first example of rocker, well, that I can remember is in a shoe called the MBT. And the like that was designed with a rocker in the sagittal plane, and I think the frontal plane was also slightly rocketed as well. So the idea being that it was very unstable and you had to use more of your stabilizing muscles and that would help tone you. I think that was the idea behind the shoe, and they made claims about it, and I think they got sued about it. I bet you bought
some for that reason. That's so you would have bought some.
I think they toned your booty, so who could not get sucked into that?
They had such a soft bit under to form the rocker, didn't they? It was like you were standing on a trampoline, but it just wasn't actually bouncy. It was just unstable, wasn't it?
So heavy too. They're like 500 or 600 grams, I reckon. And then Hoka came out with a rocker, like their rocker geometry in their shoes early on. And the idea is that the shoe almost has like a fulcrum underneath. The rockers sit in different points of different shoes, but there's a fulcrum where your foot sort of rolls over it, and combined with stiffness, it unloads sort of plantar pressure, and the Achilles and calf is unloaded because of the kind of the forward motion. The shoe's sort of helping you sort of propel forward because of the stiffness and rocker in that. And then when we get sort of certain pathologies come through that the store, we use the rocker to try to get them walking or running more comfortably.
Big toe arthritis, sometimes forefoot problems, second capsule, even midfoot arthritis, because they struggle to sort of go from heel to toe in that sort of sagittal plane. This shoe sort of does the work for you a touch more.
And it doesn't it doesn't sort of load the big toe as much. It removes movement through the big toe. So if you're sort of lessening movement through the joint, then hopefully it doesn't make it as angry.
I was gonna say Hoka does need some kudos for that, because that Meta Rocker design, the high stack with the rocker, is kind of like they've started that, like all the brands are doing these shoes now. And I think their main thing was the high stack, and the high stack enabled the shoe to have such an aggressive rocker. Like, without the stack, you can't have a proper or a big enough rocker that you'd feel. So it's like the maximalist era has brought in the ability to put in all these rockers as well. And now pretty much every brand has that now. They were definitely onto a good thing there.
And it's associated in performance now as well, like that attribute being a high stack with a rocker right at the end to try and decrease the amount of oxygen required to run at some maximal pace. Like, it's been documented in literature now as well. So people confuse the combination of the high stack and the carbon plate and the rocker. It's hard to dissociate what actually leads to performance. They're all pretty intertwined. So it's just part of the puzzle that makes you run a bit easier, and obviously you can use it to reduce risk of particular loading injuries as well. So
And shoes without rockers now tend to feel quite almost dead and lifeless underfoot. They feel and so your foot hits the deck and you're like, oh, why isn't it helping me? Why aren't I moving forward as much?
Traditional racing flat turns into a rocker by the end of its life, but it's not a rocker.
This is a decent comparison.
Oh yeah, there you go.
You see that?
Yep.
So
absolutely
vastly different, traditional, very traditional geometry here versus rear foot. The thing as well, like rockers traditionally, we always talked about that 4-foot rocker, but now this rear foot rocker as well is something that has become a lot more apparent with the high stack stuff, which does also change the stability aspects and the impact, like how it feels on impact as well, particularly for hill strikers. Like, if you've got a high stack shoe and the rear foot is like very traditional and very squared off, it's a bit more abrupt. Whereas if it's very rocketed, also not just 4-foot rockers, but the way the rear foot in shoes are rocketed as well these days. And just essentially how that also has a pretty big impact and can, like, it's worth considering like shoes that have it and don't have it, in terms of particularly if you're like a heavy hill striker. Having that rear foot rocker, I think, is a good design feature, because it'll help that transition be a little bit less abrupt.
Do you guys remember when the first Glide Ride came out, and they sort of did, it was a very subtle marketing thing where they got people to run on like a big desert, that's it. And they're trying to get people to run like as far as they could without any timing or any awareness through there. And they're talking about how like the shoe would require less energy and obviously less strategy of muscle use, for example, to go further. And so it was like the first sort of marketed, I thought, of use of the rocker. And the shoe since then has been, I don't know, they haven't really marketed it since, for example, as well. That died off a little bit quickly as well. But we talk about it decreasing, energy use, for example, in terms of maybe decreasing the amount of load of the ankle joint as well. So you mentioned a while back, Tommy, that when you wore the Evo Ride, so it was a lower stack version, similar to the Glide Ride, but you got a bit of a flare of Achilles issues. Do you want to walk us through that?
Yeah, I mean, probably because it is lower stack. So like I was saying, I think a rocker design works better. A true rocker design that's actually going to offload the ankle and the calf and Achilles, I think, does need to be a bit higher stack, so it can actually be have a true sort of rocker effect. Whereas, I don't know, the Evo Ride is a bit lower stack. It was just a bit more, and because it's a low drop, it was a bit more abrupt. So for me, I felt it wasn't a true rocker sensation. It was like a bit of a pseudo rocker. Like, it still felt a little bit rockerish on the forefoot, but didn't have that deloading effect that the higher stack ones have.
Yeah.
So I'd say, you'd want to kind of be careful with that with people with calf and Achilles stuff. I think the cushion there is also a factor for this stack height is a factor for deloading.
Do you think that'll be the same almost with the Magic Speed a little bit as well? It is lower stack, the heel's quite soft.
For sure.
It's 33 mil. That's pretty high still.
It's true.
What's that?
It's 33 mil in the rear foot, isn't it?
28 or 29, I think.
Oh, that's without the outer sole and inner sole though. Like, that's...
Okay.
But it doesn't function that way though. Like, you've got so much stiffness and so much outsole that's stiff in the forefoot, plus the carbon plate, but the heel's so compliant. They've got this little cutout piece in the rear foot, which means when you hit the ground, your heel can poke through. And so it functionally acts almost like a zero drop shoe to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that, yeah, you can't just automatically look at the shoe. Oh yeah, it's rocket. It's going to be, it's going to really offload calf and Achilles. I don't think, yeah, it's a little bit more complex than that. You kind of want to feel it soft and the stack there. And I reckon as runners, once you start using a lot of different shoes, you should intuitively be able to feel like the drop, like when you pop a shoe on, it's good to, I think that's a really important thing, is just to get in tune with what, how it feels pitch wise, because that's going to dictate probably where some of that load goes as you start to use that shoe.
And I think the point is how it's measured pitch wise and how it functions pitch wise is completely different.
Yeah, that's why you can't always go off the tech sheets and stuff like that. For sure.
This is the New Balance 5280. So this was like their road mile shoe, which is one that Ellie wore over in Dollar when she ran a 31.18. And I remember messaging her and saying, put a heel raise, but this shoe needs a heel raise. It has the rocker in it. It's got a stiff carbon plate in it. But because there's nothing underneath the rear foot, it was so soft. So you walk in it and you felt like your heel was on the ground and you were a negative 10 mil, for example. So with a heel raise, this felt fantastic. But the upper's probably too compliant to really put a heel raise in and sort of not feel sloppy around the outsole. That's the only issue. But this is a great example of a shoe that when you put your foot in it, it feels negative drop, but it acts like a spike. So it's probably meant to function that way, to be honest. Don't hit your heel in it.
Yeah. Hey, Julian, are you going to get the new, I heard that Hoka Bondi doing a Bondi X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing definitely, that.
Yeah, we are. I actually like the idea because it's sort of, it's a shoe that's designed for someone to run faster in who's not a traditional race flat wearer. So it's going to be a lot more stable than the current racing type shoes on the market. It's going to be a lot more stacked than those shoes as well. I think the fit will be more generous. It'll just be a really safe way for someone to get into a carbon plated shoe that would be really hesitant to with the current range out there.
The Carbon X currently, the Carbon X2, it still looks globally pretty stable compared to some of the other ones. So the surface area
it
looks
is,
pretty,
yeah.
Yeah.
But the Bondi X will be a little different in terms of, like, I'm looking at it as a really comfortable jogging shoe, actually, because it'll be lighter than a normal Bondi and it'll sort of, it'll be a mix between a Bondi and a racing shoe, somewhere in the middle. But yeah, we'll see how it, we'll see.
It's going to be lighter. That's good.
I'm pretty sure it's going to be, yeah, I'm pretty sure. It didn't, to me, it felt really nice. I put a size maybe 10 sample on my foot. Maybe we shouldn't talk about this because it hasn't been released or anything.
I've only heard it's coming. I haven't heard any more than that. So, but that could be good. That'd be probably, good for recreational runners. And obviously, like the ASICS range coming out, they've got some higher stack shoes. I'm unsure what foam they're putting in them. The shoe looks geometrically more stable as well, but you've almost got like a hierarchy of what shoes are stable and not stable in that list now as well. So you can find like your Saucony Endorphin range or the Pros and Speed. They feel pretty stable to me compared to say, a 4% Flyknit or even the Next Percent feels a bit less stable, to be honest. So, Well, I reckon that's just about it, guys. I reckon we've covered enough for this episode. We'll get Brady to join us two Zoom meetings together. And, we'll get some feedback on the video footage. We'll try and do this maybe once every couple of months, unless you hate it, and then we won't do it. I mean, we'll just do normal pods. So we'll find a guest for the next episode. Actually, we've got one ready, I reckon. So, but
ready and waiting.
Ready and waiting. So what do you guys got planned for the month?
Oh, shoe-wise, what have I got planned? Well, the 880, the new 880 releases, we actually have those arrive in store yesterday, so that's an interesting one. Looks really good. It's one of our biggest selling shoes in the store. So
same geometry
fun.
Midsole, or?
Well, on paper, yes, but I can already see a few tweaks that they haven't called out, and good tweaks too, like more integrity on that sort of back corner in the rear foot. Yep. So one, probably the biggest kind of criticism of the shoe was that it was maybe a little soft on the crash pad area. It looks like it's been more filled in and it looks like it's actually a higher stack through there now.
Okay.
So that's a good one. Yeah. There's the what's come? Oh, the Vaporfly 2 comes out in April. That's supposed to be quite like, I mean, I've seen that in person, but a more accommodating toe box looks to be the big update. The RC Elite 2, we might be recording right when that one sort of drops, I reckon, next month.
Yep.
We don't have an exact date on it, but it'll be a big one. That's New Balance. Yeah, it does. And then, yeah, that's probably what I'll be in.
What about you, Tommy?
I'm going to be doing a lot of walking in some UFOS thongs. That's for sure. Have a little bit of a plantar flare, which I haven't had for like 15 years.
That's what happens when you have 2 weeks off, Tommy. You get other injuries.
No.
Soft tissues, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It always happens. You have like I get like a flu and then I obviously get back a bit too quickly and niggles pop up. But I got floorboards at home and honestly, you just pop that on. It's like, yes, it just feels so much awesome. Better to get around the house in.
Yeah.
What else? So I'm going to the New Balance rep, Matt, he's coming to the clinic later today. So he's going to show me some of his range. I think he may be getting me a pair of the Rebel version 2. So that'll be cool. Be keen to try those out. probably some grass session.
I did like the first model. I did like the first
what,
model.
Wait, what injury do you have?
It'll be fine. I've got many strategies. <on my side. laughs> yeah, it'll be fine. What else? Yeah, that's nothing too new to play with. But I've got just the Invincibles with my orthotics in there and my safety mileage shoe, and then I'll play around with some of these faster shoes for sessions.
Yep. And if you were to run a marathon tomorrow, what shoe would you be wearing?
Ah, Next Percent.
Yep. So still all this magical shoe on the market, and still no one's willing to step away from the Next Percent.
I'll wear the Alpha. No. I'd pick the Alpha.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to wearing the Alpha. So I got the Kipchoge one through here as well. That's gonna be fantastic.
I'm probably Bikili type. Won't like it.
You haven't tried it though. How can you not have tried it? You're on a fucking Running Shoe Geeks podcast and you can't. It's embarrassing.
You have to send him one.
Yeah. I actually had a dream last night that I was running in it. That was random. I don't know why I was thinking about that shoe, but I don't think I'll be responding any more than the Next Percent. And so it's just a matter of like whether I'm going to fork out the money for it or not. And I'm just like, I don't think, like, I'm curious, but I don't think I'm going to get a performance benefit over Next Percent personally, because it's a touch heavier. And I just feel like Next Percent's enough shoe for me.
Yeah.
I ran a marathon in Mayflies. I think Next Percent's enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Oh, well, Jules, I'm coming up your way at Easter time, coming to Hall's Gap for a week. So I'll probably start running there. Yeah. Good part of the world, Hall's Gap. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll have to bring out the trail shoes.
I will. I've only got a pair of Terra Kaiga. That's all I've got left, which is like the second version, which you hated, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, that wasn't the right one.
Real low that stack.
Yeah, hard too.
I reckon one month we have to have a chat about what's the deal with Performance Trail. Like, when are they going to bring out some models? Like, I saw yesterday some Adidas Trail super shoe, but I reckon that's like, surely that's going to be something in the next few years. That like Six Track was just on last weekend, and a lot of chat about, you know, what people are going to wear. People were wearing, like, the guy that came third, he was wearing Next Percent. Surely they can get
you wore Lunar Racer when you won yours, didn't you? You wore this exact shoe.
Yeah.
But what, like, about what is Ben St. Lawrence wear?
I'm not sure, to be honest. He was undecided, and I don't know what he went with. I think he might have just gone with. I think actually, someone told me he wore Skechers.
Oh,
okay, like a trail shoe, so not like their Performance Hyperburst.
I don't know, to be honest. Yeah. I don't know. I'm probably just talking crap.
Yeah, fair enough.
What about Ben Duffus, the winner? What did he wear?
It looked okay.
What's that? Yeah, okay.
It looked Hoka for Ben Duffus. Yeah. I think. I don't know. It might have not been, but it looked Hoka.
Which one? A trail shoe?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I'm just seeing a pic on Instagram. It might have not been. No, someone could probably write in and tell us that one, to be honest. So, but this, I think
you need to define. I saw the pic. I couldn't tell what model it was.
Yeah, you need to define what's going to give you performance in trail. Like if you're out there for 4 hours or whatever as well, it's probably going to be, you know, a bit more shoe and you need a little bit more lug, and then you need to make sure that you get rid of water when you run through a river. So,
needs to be good drainage.
Yeah. Stable going downhill.
Yeah.
Yeah. The North Face have the new carbon plated shoe called the Vector. I've never seen it before, but then Saucony are bringing out a trail racing. Yeah. But that's again a little bit hard to know how that will be as well, because the sample is a little funny. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Could probably safely say that the trail is where the shoe geometry probably doesn't play as big an influence as the road or perhaps the track. So
yeah,
not as important. Other factors matter.
All right, cool.
All right, guys. You guys have a good month. Keep in touch, and hopefully this is semi-successful.
Yep. All right.
Sounds good. Hope so.
All right, guys.
See ya.
See you later. Bye.
See you, fellas.
Oh,